Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use the shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or a smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The Japanese government has decided to use soil contaminated from the Fukushima disaster across the country. Parts of Australia saw record rainfall of 23 inches, creating huge floods. Panic spread across Gaza as Israeli troops opened fire on Gazans trying to get food from a food distribution point set up by a U.S.-backed aid foundation, NHK Japan.
Japan's government has decided to use soil removed during decontamination work near the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant at the Prime Minister's office in Tokyo. It's intended to set a precedent and help gain public understanding for reusing the soil outside the prefecture. The government on Tuesday compiled a basic policy on reuse and ultimate disposal. The entire cabinet was present at the meeting. Large volumes of earth and other materials collected during decontamination after the 2011 disaster have been kept at a vast storage facility. It straddles the Fukushima towns of Okuma and Futaba. Under the law, the soil must be disposed of outside the prefecture by March 2045. To reduce the total volume, the government plans to use some with low radioactivity in public works and other projects across the country.
I'd like to request that the government as a whole take every opportunity to widely disseminate information on the necessity and safety of reusing the soil.
The soil at the Prime Minister's residence will be the first to be reused, not counting safety trials in Fukushima. Sources say it will likely be used in flower beds and elsewhere at government offices. But the government is having trouble gaining understanding across the country. NHK conducted a survey last month covering every prefecture. Not one prefecture said it would accept the soil, even with preconditions attached. A roadmap is currently being drawn up for the next 5 years. It's expected to be ready around this summer.
People in Australia have seen days of record rainfall that have triggered devastating floodwaters. The deluge has killed at least 4. Australian weather officials say more than 600 millimeters of rain fell in part of New South Wales over the last 4 days. That's the most since record-keeping began 29 years ago. Houses in the state are flooded and main roads have been cut. About 50,000 people have reportedly been left isolated. Authorities are pushing ahead with aid efforts. They've conducted more than 700 rescues in New South Wales. Weather forecasters say the rain will let up by Saturday. Local officials warn people in inundated areas to be aware of the risks that come with floodwaters, including snakes and vermin.
Confusion is spreading in the Gaza Strip after Israeli troops reportedly opened fire on people heading to a food distribution point set up by a U.S.-backed aid foundation. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation started its work on Tuesday. Since then, Israeli soldiers have reportedly killed several residents trying to get food. Authorities in Gaza said 3 people were shot dead as they gathered to get food on Tuesday. Multiple Arab news outlets reported on Wednesday that 6 people had been killed by Israeli gunfire as they tried to reach a food distribution point. Some countries said that priority should be given to conventional aid cooperation delivered by the UN instead of the private foundation backed by the US.
The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation lost control of its distribution center, with multiple casualties reported and great distress for those desperately seeking aid. In contrast, the UN has a clear plan to deliver life-saving aid at scale.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times they announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK is available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. Four press reviews. First, Germany has deployed a permanent battalion of troops overseas, the first since 1945. On Monday, the Israeli Defense Force announced plans to take over 75% of Gaza in the next few months. On Tuesday, the Israeli press covered the Jerusalem Day marches celebrating the Six-Day War. On Wednesday, the Israeli press reported on the 600th day of war in Palestine. France 24.
Germany has deployed a battalion of troops overseas for the very first time since the Second World War.
Yeah, that's right, Allison. And it is dominating the German dailies today. This is the Rheinische Post on the front page here, going with this headline here. Deep in the East, it says on its front page, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz was in Vilnius, Lithuania yesterday to oversee the deployment of about 5,000 German soldiers to the country, the Post saying that he expressed Germany's determination to work with NATO and its partners to defend the alliance against any aggression. This article from the Frankfurter Allgemeine here, titled Berlin and Vilnius, also looks at this decision, examining the significance of this decision to station troops there. The paper reminds us that just over 20 years ago, German troops were stationed in Afghanistan, but at the time, it was a temporary operation. The deployment of troops to Vilnius is the first time since the Second World War that German troops will be stationed abroad permanently. I quote, "Unlike Afghanistan, this is not an asymmetrical fight against a hidden enemy. It's about national defense against the army of the Russian dictatorship." The German Daily also evoking what it calls the end of any illusions we may have about Russia.
And there's also a bit of skepticism in the German papers today.
Yeah, there's this article also from a Frankfurter Daily called Frankfurter Rundschau. In this article, it expresses its concern at how feasible this permanent foreign deployment is, calling it nonetheless a, quote, remarkable move. The paper says that this feel-good movement is temporary. It questions notably how Germany is even going to be able to keep its promise of ensuring the security of its NATO partners when it, quote, lacks both soldiers and weapons. The paper really reminding us that the strength of NATO ultimately relies on the U.S. And it's clear right now that the U.S. President Donald Trump is no longer interested in peace in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, Israel's strikes on Gaza have killed dozens over the weekend, but most papers are focusing on the IDF's plan to take over Gaza. Let's start in Israel with the Times of Israel. They have this article here today, which goes over the proposal. They say the IDF plans to capture 75% of Gaza in the next few months. It would mean that 2 million Palestinians would be pushed into three small safer zones, which amount to less than 25% of the Gaza Strip. But there's one part of the plan in particular that's caused alarm in the papers, and that's the joint Israeli and American proposal for a new aid delivery mechanism, which is set to start today. Now, the Washington Post is looking at that in their this article here, and the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in particular, which it says raises questions of morality and workability. Now, the foundation would be responsible for distributing aid in Gaza. This article says that two military organizations have been contracted to assist the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation at Safe Reach Solutions and UG Solutions. Now, Peretz is looking at those organizations into more detail, and they argue that they don't look like humanitarians. This article warns that Safe Reach Solutions was created by a former CIA official and is a merger of other private military companies, including Academy, or formerly called Blackwater. And Blackwater was known for its activities in Iraq, most notably the Nisour Square massacre, which saw 17 Iraqi civilians killed. Meanwhile, the second military organization, UG Solutions, is headed by a self-confessed, quote, degenerate who joined the US Army to inflict pain on the people who inflicted it on his country. Now, questions over transparency have led to this article in Arab News today. The resignation of the CEO of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, as announced early this morning. Former CEO Jake Wood said he was stepping down after realizing that implementing the plan was not possible whilst, quote, also strictly adhering to humanitarian principles.
Stay to Jerusalem for this next story. Those marches and celebrations that we told you about earlier for Israel's Jerusalem Day. What have the papers got on this?
Well, let's have a look at the Israeli press on this. The Jerusalem Post had those marches on their front page there. They had this rather peaceful-looking photo of celebrants waving the Israeli flag for Jerusalem Day, the celebration of the 1967 Six-Day War. But other papers in Israel were covering those marches in a completely different way. Let's have a look at the Times of Israel here. They reported that celebrations weren't as peaceful as you would think from reading the front page of the Jerusalem Post. This article says that far-right protesters chanted death to Arabs and held up banners calling for the expulsion of Palestinians. Now, the left-leaning paper Haaretz is also reporting on these here. They have a photo of that banner in this article. This says that the hate-filled Jerusalem march, that's a quote, demonstrated the far-right's true goal for Gaza. This article is extremely critical of the celebrations. It calls the participants, quote, racist, far-right religious nationalists who showed up to celebrate the most tasteless date on Israel's holiday calendar.
Israel is entering its 600th day of war in Gaza. How are the Israeli papers reporting on that?
That's right, Stuart. The right-wing Jerusalem Post has a front page here. We see the names of more than 1,000 Israeli victims of the October 7 attacks. In another article, the Jerusalem Post, here an analysis, writes that the Middle East has been transformed. The paper writes that 600 days since Hamas acted on, quote, a jihadist fantasy to destroy the Jewish state, now Hamas has carried out a pogrom that would have made, quote, the Nazis proud. The analysis also says that the inability to bring hostages home shapes how many Israelis view the war. The left-wing Haaretz, however, has a bit of a different read. Enough is enough. Israel is committing war crimes, reads the headline of this opinion piece. The interesting thing here is that this opinion piece is written by a former Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert. He says that Israel is waging a war without a purpose, without goals or a clear purpose, with no chances of success, says the former prime minister. He calls Netanyahu's government a criminal gang that is carrying out a private political war and that is transforming the enclave into a humanitarian disaster area.
Those press reviews were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. In the Swiss Alps, a melting glacier caused landslides, destroying a village. An interview with Hanna Hundel, a climate policy specialist at Stanford, about whether the event in Switzerland indicates new severe climate change. Then an interview with Julie Below of the Geneva Graduate Institute on the food crisis in Palestine. Bill Deere, director of UNRWA, dispels the story that Hamas has been stealing the aid entering Gaza. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
We take you now to the Swiss Alps, where one person is missing after a glacier collapsed, burying the village of Blatten. Experts had been monitoring the situation for weeks as chunks broke off the side of the mountain, piling up on a glacier below. 9 million tons of debris was too much. Let's talk to Henna Handel about this, a policy specialist when it comes to the climate. She joins us from Stanford in California. Research suggests climate change is increasing landslides in the Swiss Alps. Is this global warming in action that we're seeing in this footage today?
We have been on a string of broken heat records. 2024 was the hottest year on record. It included the warmest summer on record, as well as the warmest day on record. So we've just been breaking multiple records. And as a result of that, we're noticing effects in the permafrost in the Arctic, as well as these glaciers melting. You know, we have the West Antarctic ice sheet, which is really important. And that's been melting at really, you know, notable rates. And so, of course, all of these effects are intertwined. And I think that's why it's so important to have these conversations about climate change, because the effects are really bearing down on populations.
So as global temperatures rise, how unstable are parts of the Swiss Alps becoming, would you say?
We're noticing that as these glaciers melt, as the Arctic permafrost thaws, as all these effects come together, and as we continue to breach these heat records, this is really part of the picture. I mean, we know, for example, that in 2015, it was decided that we need to keep global average temperature increase under 1.5 degrees Celsius to avert the worst impacts of climate change that could potentially be irreversible. And we know that we're actually not meeting that mark. It's going up and up and up. And so because of that, unfortunately, these effects are coming to bear and we're having to deal with disasters like the population in Switzerland is right now.
Are these one-off things, though, or can we expect more large events like these to happen more often?
Yeah, unfortunately, we're looking at extreme disasters happening more often because of climate change-induced effects. We know, for example, if we take, cyclones, tropical cyclones, they're increasing in severity because of human-induced climate change. If we look at heat events, heat waves, they're increasing in duration, intensity, and frequency. Look at the duration of fire seasons that are lengthening. I mean, all these extreme weather events are actually happening because of human-induced climate change in part, because we're not tamping down on climate change. Unfortunately, those events will probably be more frequent and or more severe in the future.
So would you say it's being dealt with at a top level? You've been a delegate to several UN climate change conferences, I believe.
I have. I've been a delegate to four UN climate change conferences. We'll be again at the COP conference this year in Brazil. You know, unfortunately, at these conferences, you have delegates from all across the world convened together to try to solve this problem. But really, it is also up to each country after the conference to execute their part and to do their role. And unfortunately, right now, we have so many challenges with actually getting countries to execute on this mission. So we also know that, for example, in the United States, where I'm coming at you from, President Trump is really adamant about undoing former President Biden's climate legacy. And we know, for example, the United States is a really key player in the global climate fight, as is the European Union, as are some other state actors. So it's really important to have the big climate players at the table, you know, doing their job. And unfortunately, right now, with the current political climate, that's been very difficult to do.
Henna Handel, thank you very much for your time.
Israeli troops have fired shots near thousands of Palestinians trying to receive aid packages as a group chosen by Israel to take food into Gaza was overwhelmed at an aid center. The Israeli prime minister admits there was a temporary loss of control as the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation handed out food. It was the second day of operations for the organization following Israel's aid blockade on the territory.
Thousands of Palestinians rushed into a new aid distribution center near Rafah in southern Gaza, tearing down fences to reach the limited supplies. Some of the first to be handed out after nearly 3 months of an Israeli blockade.
There was no order. The people rushed to take something. We didn't get anything. There was shooting and we fled.
The Israeli military said it fired warning shots, sending crowds fleeing. Reporters on the scene heard tank and gunfire. This man was seen lying shot on the ground. Though most of the crowd left empty-handed, officials said 8,000 boxes were handed out, each containing ingredients for about 60 meals. The United Nations is refusing to cooperate with Israel's new aid system, saying it does not meet humanitarian principles and risks forcibly displacing Palestinians. It says Israel should open more border crossings and allow aid to be distributed independently and impartially.
And we are now joined by Julie Biot. She's an associate professor for anthropology and sociology at the Geneva Graduate Institute, and she specializes in humanitarian aid organizations. Julie, the UN and other aid groups have criticized the new Gaza Humanitarian Foundation because it, quote, contradicts humanitarian principles. What's your take?
Well, I think we all agree. I think, you know, it's these images that you just show are really heartbreaking. And this chaos that we see unfolding before our eyes as a genocide is going on could have been completely anticipated. So there is no humanitarian aid being distributed at all. No, it's people rushing to try and grab whatever they can in a situation where people have been starving for months now. Mm. So this is a diversion of attention, and I think we should not use the term humanitarian to describe this scheme that is very cynical and very sad.
Mm. Now, do you think that Gazans who are desperate and hungry, do they really care who the food comes from?
I don't think Gazans care about where the food comes from. The thing is that the humanitarian, you know, this humanitarian foundation is a scheme that is meant to divert the attention of the international community to what is exactly going on at the moment as we speak, which is a genocide. And I think we need to be worried, you know, of the Israeli government's attempt at trying to whitewash what it is actually doing. Mm. So the fact that these three distribution points, you know, are placed in southern Gaza is also a means to attract the population to that part of the strip in order to be able to occupy the rest of the strip. I mean, it's quite clear. So it has nothing to do with humanitarianism. It has to do with, the military maneuvers that the government of Israel is currently, organizing.
Julie Biot there with the Geneva Graduate Institute. Thank you very much.
I'd like to welcome Bill Deer now, the director of the Washington Representative Office of UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Can I just put something to you?
Sure.
Israel argues, though, that this new aid distribution organization is needed to avoid Hamas looting and stealing aid. And it says UNRWA, which is your organization, has been infiltrated by Hamas. What's your response to that?
Certainly, because you get to the heart of this fiction that you need this solution in search of a problem. Recall Ambassador David Satterfield of the United States repeatedly heard these complaints about Hamas taking supplies from the United Nations and, using them for their own benefit. And consistently, Ambassador Satterfield has said, prove it. And what these Netanyahu government is very good at is making accusations, but not providing the information or evidence to, substantiate their claims.
Right.
And, once again, we're in another situation where they say this, but when you ask them to prove it, crickets chirp.
That was Bill Deer from UNRWA in Washington, D.C. Appreciate your insights today.
Those reports and interviews were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, and most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, there is a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write directly to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show on the airwaves. Please help if you can. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please help support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. There was an editorial in the Mexican newspaper La Jornada about the continuing U.S. economic blockade of Cuba. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The economic, commercial, and financial blockade imposed by the United States on Cuba is completely contrary to international law, is abominable given the suffering that has inflicted on millions of civilians, according to the Mexican newspaper La Jornada. Sunday's edition of La Jornada said, whatever justification the occupants of the White House may give to maintain and intensify the blockade, it must be remembered that it is completely contrary to international law. The blockade, condemned each year by the United Nations General Assembly overwhelmingly, is abominable given the endless suffering inflicted on millions who have nothing to do with geopolitical conflicts. According to a report, Mike Hammer, the U.S. top diplomat in Havana, has announced that Washington plans to toughen the policy of annihilating the Cuban economy in continuity with the measures taken by President Donald Trump. Since his return to the White House, the Republican president has carried out actions such as reinserting the island on the unilateral list of alleged state sponsors of terrorism, tightening regulations on remittances, and canceling immigration programs from the previous administration. The editorial in La Jornada, Mexico City's newspaper in La Jornada, said, it is difficult to imagine what new mechanisms the magnate and his subordinates can devise to punish the Cuban population because their authorities do not submit to the superpower's whims. Not only did he undo, talking about Donald Trump, all of the progress made in the last phase of Barack Obama's administration toward détente and understanding, but he also added new layers of oppression and sadism that have plunged Cuba into a desperate situation. The editorial, entitled Trump versus Cuba, Hardening the Sadism, says that this is due to the frontline presence of figures such as Secretary of State Marco Rubio, a member of the most radical and interventionist wing of the Cuban-American community in Florida. Rubio, like Trump himself, continues to view Cuba through Cold War blinders, despite the fact that the Soviet bloc disappeared more than 30 years ago, and that paradoxically, the tycoon cultivates much more sensible relations with Russia than those of his predecessors. In this way, the editorial says, millions of Cubans are being made victims of the outdated ideological phobias of a political group that has no regard for the liberal democratic institutions in whose name Washington has endeavored to destroy the Cuban Revolution.
That report was from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for the show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report's been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury and staying in a house that's connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.